Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Before we get started, if you're seeing the screen, the audio portion of today's presentation has begun. Thank you again for joining us today for the Fulbright Alumni Hour, Postdoctoral Experiences. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am an Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at the Institute of International Education, and I will be your moderator today. I'm joined by three alumni, Dr. Carol Ferrara, who is a postdoc researcher to France, Dr. Alia Khan, who is a postdoctoral researcher to Chile, and Dr. Kenneth Collender, who is a postdoctoral fellow to Israel. We will talk with all three of these as we move along, and I want you guys to be aware that you are welcome to type questions in at any point in the chat box. Before we begin the presentation with the alumni, I do like to at least just go over the mission and the history of the Fulbright program. The Fulbright program has been around for nearly 75 years, and it is the U.S. government's flagship international educational and cultural exchange program. It is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State and funded by the U.S. government and institutions abroad, with the mission of fostering mutual understanding between nations, advancing knowledge across communities, and improving lives around the world. And you can see that these researchers we'll be talking to today have had these experiences and will be sharing them with you. The Fulbright program also seeks to promote diversity and inclusion in all of their programs, and as such, we encourage people from all areas of the United States, all different ethnic groups or other types of underrepresented audiences to apply for the Fulbright program. We take every opportunity we can to support people regardless of their origin, their socioeconomic status, disability, gender identity, sexual orientation, and geographic region that they come from. So we really do strive to have the Fulbright program represent the diversity of the United States society when they are representing us abroad. The Fulbright program has 14 specific awards that are for postdoctoral scholars only. So these awards are for people who have generally graduated within the last 3 to 5 years. And as you can see from this list, we have 2 specific postdoc awards to Australia, 1 to Canada, 1 to Chile, 1 to China, 1 to the Czech Republic, 1 to France, 4 to Israel, 1 to Mexico, 1 to Taiwan, and then 1 that is a multi-country award for EU affairs. Just because there are 14 unique awards does not mean that there are only 14 postdoctoral awards total, because some of these awards give out multiple awards. So multiple scholars can receive awards for these specific awards here listed in the catalog. I will have a link to the postdoc webinar that I did a couple months back, and if you are interested in any of these awards, please look there for specific details about the awards. Generally, you need to file your dissertation by February of 2021 to be eligible for the awards. However, some awards allow you to apply as long as you plan to file your dissertation before the award begins. Now, the way that the actual programming today is going to be set up is we'll be focusing on the alumni experiences. So you'll be hearing all about their experiences abroad. However, I know you probably have a lot of other questions, so I encourage you to type questions in the chat box, and I will be answering questions about the logistics that you might have of applying for a postdoc award. But I do want the time that the alumni are talking to be questioned specifically about their experiences. So if you have a question for a specific alumni, please write that person's name in the box and I will make sure that they have the opportunity to answer the questions that you have. Okay, let's get started. I'd like to introduce Dr. Carol Ferrara, who is a postdoc to France. She graduated from Boston University and her host was École des Hautes Études, which is probably not the correct pronunciation, but I apologize, I don't have French language skills. She did a research project in anthropology, Breaking the Republican Mold, Independent Private Muslim and Catholic Schooling in France. So Carol, if you can unmute yourself, we would love to hear about your postdoctoral experience to France, if you could introduce that.
Sure. So let's see. I suppose the first question I'm supposed to be answering is how I selected the country and the award. And so I had historically already worked in France for my dissertation research. And basically, the way I designed my postdoc application was to do a follow-up study on my ethnographic research that I had done for my dissertation. So it was an obvious choice for me to choose France. And then I decided to study at EHSS, which is an abbreviation for the term that Carlene introduced. And mostly because there was an individual who worked within the university, a scholar who had been on my dissertation committee. So it was an obvious choice to get a letter of recommendation, a letter of invitation, I think, from her. And then I was able to continue working with her during my postdoc year. And overall, it was a great experience until it was cut short, of course. And I was able to share my research with a lot of scholars in France and get really unique feedback, because I usually write about France and about religion in France and schools in France, but usually only receive feedback from the U.S. side of things. So that was a really excellent experience for me to get feedback from the other side. I was able to work with colleagues who sort of think about these questions differently in a different set of social scientific data and questions. And so that was really beneficial. And overall, it was a really great experience. And I'm sorry it was cut short, but I was able to carry out most of my research before we left in March.
Thank you so much, Carol, for sharing. And I'm sure they'll have a lot more questions about your project to France and your experience there. I'm going to move on to Dr. Aliyah Khan, who was a postdoc to Chile. She graduated from the University of Colorado in Boulder, and she was hosted at the Chilean Antarctic Institute in Environmental Sciences, doing a project on black carbon and snow algae, an intercomparison study of impurities in snow ice along the Antarctic Peninsula. So, Aliyah, would you like to spend a few minutes introducing yourself and your project, please?
Sure, yeah. So, my name's Aliyah Khan, and I'm now an assistant professor at Western Washington University in Bellingham. And my Fulbright experience was really an amazing opportunity that allowed me to pursue research in a different region of Antarctica. My PhD research was more on the McMurdo Dry Valley side that's accessed through the U.S. And so this opportunity allowed me to work along the Antarctic Peninsula with my Chilean colleagues. And I selected the country pretty much because of the award. This is such a unique Fulbright to be able to work with the Chilean Antarctic Institute. So that was pretty clear to look for a Chilean host. And so I looked through some existing projects that were funded already through the Chilean Antarctic Institute and found a host who was working on complementary research and reached out, and he was super enthusiastic about collaborating. And so it worked out. And let's see, the benefits, I'm just looking through my questions. I was able to get a really unique data set that I actually just submitted for publication last week, and it's led to new collaborations. I'm actually a co-PI now on a Chilean Antarctic project, and we're collaborating on some other proposals as well. So my colleagues were super generous and hospitable, and I really appreciate that. And I definitely recommend this program to others as well.
Thank you so much, Aliyah. All right, we're moving on to Dr. Kenneth Collender, a postdoctoral fellow to Israel, graduated from West Virginia University, and his host was the University of Haifa. His discipline was history, and he studied the military-industrial peace process, Congress, the executive, and the United States-Israel special relationship from 1967 to 1979. So, Kenny, what would you like to share today with the audience?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm really happy to have an opportunity to encourage people to recent PhDs to apply for the Fulbright postdoc and to speak in support of the program. I had an amazing experience in Israel, both professionally and personally. My project, that was actually a tentative project title. It's evolved since then. I did manage to finish my book manuscript. It's called America's Israel. It's a little bit shorter. That one's a bit of a mouthful. But the Fulbright was such an exceptional opportunity and experience for me. 2 years before applying for the Fulbright, I was a visiting assistant professor of history, and I was teaching all the time. And I just didn't have the time or the energy to really dig into my research and my writing. So the Fulbright postdoc offered me the financial support, the intellectual support to move forward with my research and my writing, and it was really a godsend to have that type of support to do the rest of my research, conduct interviews in Israel. That was instrumental in finishing my manuscript and sharing it with other scholars in the field, getting feedback, finding a publisher. All of these tasks that I was able to get done because of the fellowship, and also personally, it was such a special experience. My wife and I decided that we would start our family while in Israel, which might surprise some people. It certainly surprised our parents, who were not too keen on that idea. But with the postdoc, there's so much flexibility that we talked about it and felt that it was the right time for us. And we had such a great support system in Israel. What I would call our Fulbright family was just so supportive. The Fulbright office in Tel Aviv, fellow Fulbrighters. We actually, right before we left in March, we had our beautiful baby girl, Elaine. She was baptized in Jerusalem, and our godparents couldn't make it, but we had two Fulbrighter friends that we made in Israel who stood as temporary sponsors for us, and that was special. So for me personally, I feel like these very significant life milestones, professionally and personally, happened during my Fulbright, and I will cherish those memories. So, I certainly encourage anyone who can make a case for applying for a Fulbright postdoc to do so, because it can be, I think, a life-changing experience.
Thank you so much, Kenny, for sharing, and for all of you for starting us on the quest to understand the process a little bit more. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask a little bit more about your path to Fulbright. A lot of people, I saw some questions coming in, like, why did you choose a postdoc-only award as opposed to an award that was, like, open to early career scholars as well? How did you come in contact with your host institution, and were there any other factors that you considered before applying? So I'll just go through the list and just have you each speak for a couple minutes about this. I know if you've already addressed it, then you can feel free to skip along on these questions, but I would like to know what other factors you considered when you were applying for these awards. So let's start with you, Carol. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your path to Fulbright, in addition to the fact that it was this follow-up study, which I think is a great way of merging your dissertation research and your postdoc.
Sure. So a little bit like Kenny, I was also teaching while I was finishing up my dissertation. And if I, sort of my options at the time were continue teaching as an adjunct in this case, apply to the mainstream job market for assistant professorship jobs, or look for postdocs. And there were only a handful of postdocs that were really fitting to my particular situation because I had just graduated. And so that was sort of a benefit to the Fulbright. Some of the postdocs I was looking at in the social sciences require you to be a few years out from your dissertation. And so that was something that was particularly attractive. The other thing I had to consider was I have a young son, and so I needed to be able to live somewhere where I would have family support. A lot of the postdoc opportunities don't necessarily come with dependent support. And going to France, my husband happens to be French, and so I was able to live with my in-laws. That was really important for me, and I think it's a real logistical challenge for a lot of us who apply for postdocs, what to do with our family. Fulbright actually does not provide dependent support for the particular award in France, at least. So that was something I really had to consider when I was applying, whether or not I could afford to also care for my family. So I was, which was great. And I was able to sort of take on that challenge. There was also the challenges, of course, of signing my kid up for school and things like that, which, again, logistical challenges. But they were sort of, like Kenny was saying, they're all kind of part of the Fulbright experience and the year there, none of which I regret by any stretch of imagination. In fact, my son really benefited from us being there, and it was a really great time to be able to spend with the other side of the family.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Alia. What about your path to Fulbright? What can you share with us from that?
Sure. So I think for me, I was really pleasantly surprised to see the opportunity. I actually hadn't realized that there were Fulbright opportunities for postdocs. So I applied when I was already in a postdoc, and this really fit in well with some of my ongoing work and some of the work I had done during my PhD. So it was a really nice way to develop or collect some new data that are really instrumental in kind of the start of my academic career. So I think it was a bit just fortuitous that the opportunity was there for this particular kind of specialized program. So I'm happy to answer more specific questions, but I think it was sort of the program kind of drew me in as opposed to me looking for the, different types of programs, if that makes sense.
All right. Thank you so much. One thing I think you pointed out that is really important to mention is that when people are in the STEM fields, they often don't think of Fulbright as an option for them because people don't necessarily associate that with STEM research. But we have so many wonderful opportunities in the STEM fields that I'm hoping more people will realize that Fulbright is for people of all disciplines and not just people who might have country-specific research to do. So thank you for bringing up that point. Finally, Kenny, do you want to talk a little bit more about your path to Fulbright? I know you mentioned some of these things in your intro, but is there anything you'd like to add? And you just have to unmute yourself first. Okay, Kenny?
Yes, so a couple things that I would add. For me, I was encouraged strongly by my PhD advisor for a couple years, really. He kept after me to apply for Fulbright because he had received one, and he spoke so highly of the experience and that it was just such an extraordinary life experience for him, and he kept pushing me in that direction. I was a little bit hesitant, but I got on board with that, decided I would apply. One challenge that I had, and I'm guessing some people would be in a similar situation, I didn't really know anyone well enough in Israel at a host institution to ask for a letter of invitation, which is, I think, a big part of the application process, is securing that letter from a host institution. And it turned out that an external member of my dissertation committee, just a wonderful human being, at Vanderbilt, he happens to know a few people in Israel, and he introduced me to somebody in the field who was very familiar with the scholarship. I just never had a chance to be introduced to him or be in touch with him. When you put up that first picture of me that you showed on the slide, that's who that was. His name is Zach Levy. He's such a phenomenal academic host. So being put in touch with him by a mutual friend, really, in the field, that was very instrumental in me completing my application. In terms of factors before applying, one thing that stood out to me, I wasn't sure how safe it would be to travel to Israel. There's certainly a lot of unrest in the region, seems to always be. I was a bit concerned about that, but I was, I was assured by so many people it's very safe. When I got there, I realized it actually is really safe. But safety was a concern for me. I also had another year as a visiting assistant if I wanted it, but I gave that up for the Fulbright. I'm really glad that I did. Those were a few things that stand out to me now as far as my path to Fulbright.
Thank you so much. I think you actually bring up a very good point about that host, because some of the questions coming in are how you found the host. In your case, you actually lucked out that you had a contact on your committee who could connect you with someone. For those of you who don't have a host, please don't let that be a barrier to applying for a Fulbright. A lot of times, the applicants will reach out to scholars in the Fulbright Scholar Directory. That's public information on our website, and I'd be happy to have you email in, and we can show you how to find that if you can't find it yourself. But people who have participated in the Fulbright program, either as a U.S. scholar going abroad or a visiting scholar coming to the U.S., are generally more than happy to help try to make connections for future scholars who want to go abroad. So please do keep that in mind, because it's something that I think is a really wonderful tool that we have. When you become part of Fulbright, you instantly get involved in this like network of people, and it's a connection that you have for your lifetime. And so just knowing that that resource is available is, I think, a wonderful thing. Okay, let's move on right here to the benefits and impact of your Fulbright. The Fulbright program does really look at the impact that your award has, not only on you and your academic career, but also on the host institution that you're a part of and a home institution that you might be coming back to. And in this case, it might be, getting ready to launch your career. So can you talk, I'll start with you, Aliyah, about the benefits and impact of your own Fulbright. How did you engage with the Fulbright Commission and your host institution? And maybe is there something that impressed you about your colleagues that you didn't expect before you went to Chile?
Yeah, sure. So I think I mentioned that this really was had a tremendous impact on the beginning of my academic career, because it allowed me to move into a new geographic region. I think I mentioned that I had done some work in a different part of Antarctica before, but this allowed me to branch out kind of beyond where I had been working for my PhD and collect new data. That's always useful when kind of moving into a new area. So that's been really beneficial, as well as just the collaborations with my host and other colleagues that I met through the process. The Fulbright Commission was also really keen to engage. I met with them in Santiago when I arrived, and then most of my work, my host is based at the University of Santiago in Chile, but a lot of my fieldwork was along the Chilean Andes and then in the Chilean Antarctic. So there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity beyond emailing with the Fulbright Commission, but they were really happy, supportive when I had questions. I think I've been so impressed by the generosity and hospitality of my colleagues. I've developed collaborations beyond just with my host through interaction while working at one of the Chilean bases. I met other Chilean colleagues and things like that. So It was really an incredible opportunity, and I really appreciate the Fulbright program for establishing this specific award, and so thank you. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Kenny, what about you? What were some of the benefits and impact of your award?
Sure. Very basically, I think, having dependable funding to do my work and my research and writing, that time and funding is very significant, but also collaborating with people in the field in Israel, getting to meet in person scholars whose scholarship that I'm familiar with, and it was certainly nice to put faces to names and to talk with Israeli scholars. One thing that's particularly beneficial to me was being able to engage Israeli scholars about U.S.-Israel relations. I come at that dynamic from an American perspective, but getting insights into an Israeli perspective, an Israeli academic perspective on U.S.-Israel relations is just invaluable. It helped me so much as I was trying to write and then revise my manuscript, being able to, I think, integrate certain nuances into my scholarship that was certainly directly related to my work and collaborating with other scholars in the field. So that was very significant as well. The Fulbright Commission, Aliyah had mentioned this, that they're just so helpful, and it's very comforting to know that the sort of the institution of Fulbright is there to help, and in terms of Fulbright Israel, they're phenomenal, and fellow Fulbrighters too. For us, it was such a nice experience. It was just so many people, very warm, very friendly, very congenial, just more on a personal rather than professional level, and making connections with people, just as human beings. It's just a really nice experience to engage fellow Fulbrighters as well. Now, something I guess that impressed me about colleagues both in Israel and fellow Fulbrighters is just how kind and how nice people were to us. It certainly made it extra special for us.
Thanks, Kenny. And one question that I had for you is, was your Fulbright to Israel 1 or 2 academic years?
2 academic years, total of 20 months. And I think Carol might have mentioned that hers was cut short. Mine was cut a little bit short. I was supposed to be in Israel through the end of April, mm-hmm. but because of the coronavirus, of course, I think we very hurriedly boarded a plane to leave Israel on March 11th, which was actually my wife's birthday. So it was cut a little bit short, but it was for 2 academic years, which is really extraordinary. 20 months.
Right, and that's the one thing I did want to point out. We have all these wonderful Fulbright opportunities, but the ones to Israel are 2 academic years. If you need a longer stretch of time to do your research, it's really a wonderful opportunity. Okay, Carol, about you. What about the impact and benefits of your Fulbright experience?
Sure. I suppose, my experiences echo those of Kenny and Aliyah in terms of working, being able to work with host country and host institution scholars and that collaborative environment. But the other thing I wanted to maybe draw attention to are the opportunities that come just from being affiliated with Fulbright while you're in your host country. Because I was actually invited to participate in a lot of national conferences and events thanks to being invited by the Fulbright Commission in France. And that was just a really wonderful opportunity to sort of experience national level conversations. Here I'm talking about, for example, I was invited to participate in a breakfast with the Minister of Education, the French Minister of Education, who had invited ministers of education from around the world. And there were a lot of young, bright minds around the room thinking about questions of education and public education, and especially religion and violence in education. And so I had a wonderful opportunity to meet and network with these young people, as well as with sort of government-affiliated officials on the topics that related to my research, which opened a lot of opportunities for thinking about even job opportunities post-Fulbright for sort of breaking out of the academic market, which I know a lot of us are thinking about as the academy sort of comes crashing down around us. And so I just wanted to draw everyone's attention to that side of things, because Fulbright is not just about academia. They have they can open a lot of doors toward other sectors of work and just some really innovative thinking in the public sector and in other sectors. So that was really an exciting opportunity for me while I was in France.
Thank you for bringing that up. When you are part of this community, you do have the opportunity to meet so many interesting people that you might not have come across otherwise. So thank you for sharing that point. Okay, one more slide before I open it up to questions, and there are a lot of great questions coming in, so please do keep them coming. The last question is just what advice you have for people applying, maybe regarding the application process, the letter of invitation, whatnot, but is there anything that you wish you had known or that you would like to advise people on the call? So I'm going to start with you, Kenny.
Sure. First of all, that's our little girl Elaine being baptized there with fellow Fulbrighters. That's a nice memory.
I love that picture.
Yeah, I like it a lot. In terms of advice, a few things stand out to me. One, with your project description, make a strong case, as strong as you can, for why you need to go to your specific country, and in fact, your research and your work is really dependent on that, and to be as detailed as possible. Just to pitch your project in such a way that this postdoc is just essential for you to continue to your work. I had an opportunity to actually look at a couple of applications for the year after I was awarded my postdoc, just to weigh in a little bit on the applications, so I had a little bit of an insight into the process. And that's one thing that stood out to me, is that being able to make that case as strong as you can, that goes a long way in the selection process, I think. And also, try to secure a letter of invitation that communicates genuine excitement for you as a scholar, for the work that you're doing, and for how you can play an important role in your host institution in that country. Now, I felt like my host, Zach, he just wrote me an extraordinary letter, beyond anything I could have asked for. And I think, virtually all applications for the Fulbright postdoc, they're all strong scholars. So, a couple things that might make your application stand out would be the way that you pitch your project and why it's so important to go to your host country, and getting that letter of invitation from your academic host, I think that can, again, communicate genuine enthusiasm. I think that will help you to make a very compelling case for your Fulbright. One other thing I would say, too, if you're fortunate enough to get a Fulbright award, one thing that we've certainly enjoyed is an opportunity to travel as well. I would encourage people, if they can, to do some traveling within your region. We felt like we may never get an opportunity to go to certain places in and around the Mediterranean there, so we try to take advantage of that. So that would be my advice. Again, just pitching your project well, letter of invitation, and get there, try to do some traveling.
Thanks, Kenny. All right, what about you, Carol? Any advice that you have for the audience today?
Yeah, so I think one of the important things that is easy to forget is to make sure you pitch your project to a broad audience, which I know is in the recommendations for the Fulbright applications, but I can't stress that enough, because when we would sit around and talk even with each other among the French, the various French scholars who were there, it became really important how diverse the group was in terms of knowledge and skills experiences, and being able to summarize one's project in a way that's understandable to other, I mean, obviously there's an intellectual level that sort of provides a basis among Fulbright scholars. However, it has to be translatable across the disciplines. So if you're writing chemistry, you know, for a chemistry postdoc, the people who were there among us as Fulbright scholars were able to tell us in really simple terms why their chemistry research, for example, was so important. And that really stood out as something that all of us had in common. We were all able to convey the importance of our projects beyond the disciplines in which we found ourselves. So making sure that especially your introduction, that first paragraph, is like, this is why my topic of study is important to everyone everywhere, you know, as broad-based as you can get. That would be my biggest advice. And then just making sure that it's polished and professional. I think sometimes we get caught up in deadlines and we forget little things. But I think that's really important, is that polish and professionalism is also sort of a key marker of the Fulbright experience.
Thanks. All right. Moving on to Alia. Advice that you have to share with the audience today?
Sure, yeah. I think one thing I really benefited from was finding a host that had some ongoing work that was really relevant to the work I was proposing. So that enabled me to do some extra field work that might have been challenging if I had just gone on my own and worked sort of on an independent project. But so I was able to really plug into some ongoing work that they had that just happened to really be in line with my research interests as well. So I think that would be my main thing, is if you can find someone who has some existing funding that is related to what you want to work on, that can be really useful, because mine was a pretty short, it was only 3 months. So I think with 3 months, you could end up spending a lot of time just trying to get started, and then the 3 months might pass quickly. So that really enabled me to kind of hit the ground running by being able to plug into something that was sort of ongoing, and we could have discussions ahead of time about planning before I arrived.
Thank you so much. All right. What I'm going to do now is I'm opening it up to questions, and I'm going to be the moderator of the questions since I can see them all in front of me, but some really great ones came in. And I am going to start with a general question, so you guys can just unmute yourself if you have something that you'd like to add with this one. But most postdoc positions are geared to provide additional training. Is this something that was addressed in your application? How did you address the training aspect? And if no training was involved, why did you choose a postdoc instead of another early career? So are any of you able to discuss the aspect of training in your research?
One thing that I would add, I don't know if I would categorize it under training, perhaps, I suppose. It was one thing that I addressed in my application, is that I intended to pursue language training in Hebrew, and I took, I think, 12 credit hours of Hebrew in Israel, and that's something that's it's important within the field of history to be able to access non-English sources to make use of them. And I wanted to improve my Hebrew, and I certainly advanced my Hebrew. I don't know if that would be relevant for some applications, perhaps. But that, in terms of training, that would be one thing that I would add.
And how is your Hebrew now, Kenny?
Not the best. We're not going to have a conversation in Hebrew. I fully intended to do more Hebrew. I actually stopped towards the end of, I'd been there about a full calendar year when I stopped with my Hebrew classes. And the main reason is because we were expecting our newborn in a couple months, and I knew that is sort of in the finishing stages of my book before I submitted it to a publisher. And in terms of finishing up any last research, last interviews, and the writing itself, getting it ready for the publisher, but also preparing for a newborn, I felt like I just didn't think that I could sustain the language element of my postdoc, which is really disappointing to me. It's just that for me, I feel like language, studying language is so labor intensive, and it takes a lot of time. I don't know that I necessarily call it hard. It's kind of a tedious process that just takes a lot of effort and time, and I didn't feel like I would be able to do that, finish my manuscript, and sort of address personal things that my wife and I were preparing for with our newborn. So I advanced what's called the intermediate level of Hebrew, but I would not feel comfortable working in an archive without a research assistant. My vocabulary is okay, but I couldn't dive really dig into sources the way that I'd like. I'd need to do at least another year of study of Hebrew before I could do that.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I have a question. This one might be applicable to you, Alia, which is, did you introduce the project to your host, or did you come up with a collaborative project in conjunction with your host?
That's a great question. I'm trying to think back. So it's been a couple of years, actually, since I had the Fulbright. But I think the way that I started the conversation was just that I wrote and, you know, provided a description of my research interests and maybe some links to some papers, and then asked if this was something they were interested in. And I guess it was just very fortuitous on my end that they already had some ongoing projects that were really in line. So I think from there we were able to develop a project that worked, that sort of utilized my research expertise, which complemented their ongoing work, if that makes sense. And so I'd say it was a pretty collaborative effort once we once that collaboration was established. And then because they had some ongoing funding, that was able to sort of support some of my Fulbright plans as well. I don't know.
So that's a great answer. But as a follow-up to that, when you said that right now you have an assistant professor position. So when you were applying, did that potential employer view your research as your research or more like your host's research?
That's a good question. So actually, I deferred my position to do my Fulbright. So that was actually sort of an interesting, I think I was still waiting to hear as to whether or not I had been awarded the Fulbright. It was sort of in this like limbo area where they needed to confirm that ENOCH, the Chilean Antarctic Program, could support my project. I think it was like recommended, but they still needed to confirm that they would support it. And so I deferred the start of my professor position in order to do the Fulbright. And so I guess I hadn't conducted it yet, so it wasn't really, during my interview, it didn't really come up, if that makes sense. But so now, I think like I'm the first author on the paper I just submitted, and my colleague or my Chilean collaborator is obviously a co-author, but he was completely supportive of me leading the work that I did, if that makes sense.
All right, great. Thank you. Did Carol or Kenny, did either of you have experience trying to justify your research as your own versus a collaborative project that you did with your host?
I did not, me personally. It's a different situation for me. Carol, I'm not sure about you.
So in the social sciences, it's pretty, your research is your research, and there's, not that it's not collaborative, but I certainly said this is the project that I would like to do. And the scholar who was writing my letter of invitation, you know, really liked the project. She gave me a little bit of feedback on my application and how I pitched the project to make it a little bit more coherent with the institution's goals and with the in France, it's important to know that there's particular laboratories that you work with, regardless of your field. So once you're in an institution, a broad institution like École des Études, then you are affiliated with a specific laboratory. So whoever you would be working with works out of a laboratory, and so you would be affiliated with that laboratory. So in order to tailor my research, you know, just ever so slightly to fit better within the goals of that laboratory, I made some changes. But the research was definitely 100% mine and my responsibility entirely.
Okay, because that brings up the next question about research funds. Did any of you guys have specific research funds as part of your award? And if not, how did you get the money to do your research, or did you not need the extra money for different supplies or lab access or whatnot? So did any of you have experience with research funds?
So I can just say I did not have any extra research funds, and I had to travel quite a bit for my research because, again, it's ethnographic research. So no laboratory, no electronic support or any physical goods, but I did have to travel quite a bit. And that was really important for me to sit down and make a budget for myself in the beginning and make sure I was able to do the research that I set out to do with the money that Fulbright provided me. And so I did not have a special budget for that. I instead budgeted that into the amount, the stipend amount, you know, included all sorts of local transportation costs as well as, you know, visiting a certain number of schools and including hotels for overnight stays when I needed to go around France to the different my different research sites.
And did you find that you were able to use your stipend to cover those costs with the budget that you created, or were you using your own personal funds?
So I didn't use any of my own personal funds, but as I mentioned in the beginning, the only way that the postdoc was feasible for me in particular with my child was living with my in-laws, so I was able to cut housing costs that way. It is a challenging stipend if you are plan on living in Paris. It's a challenge, and I would encourage anyone who's applying to think to really be aware of that and to think about how, you know, housing is going to be your biggest expense. So different ways to cut costs on housing, living with other scholars in the area, connecting with other researchers to try and get an idea of, you know, networking for open apartments and things like that, because the housing is going to be the biggest challenge for sure.
Thank you. Do either of the rest of you have any comments that you'd like to make about research funding and how you managed to cover some of your research costs?
This is Alia. I can just mention that I also did not have additional research funds, and so I think that's where working with a host who had some ongoing research, they were able to help support some of the fieldwork costs, which was really useful. But for the analytical costs, I encumbered that through my stipend and just kind of like sample shipping and things like that. Just something to keep in mind. And I'll just echo what was just said about housing, but I think that was also the largest cost for me. Just finding short-term housing, I think, in general, is more expensive. So depending on how long the Fulbright is, that's something to consider.
I agree with Aaliyah and Carol, everything that they've said. Housing is the big cost. I would have to imagine Paris would be a lot more expensive than Haifa. Haifa was actually pretty reasonable. It was easier for me to conduct research. I needed to go to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, but it's really a manageable train ride. It was short of an hour from Haifa to Tel Aviv, another half hour from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, so I didn't even need to stay overnight at hotels, but I did not have a separate research fund or stipend. My cost for research came directly from the stipend, but it was fine, in part because the housing was, compared to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, Haifa is a lot more reasonable. So that helped, but also that Israel, you know, the southern half of Israel is basically a desert, so it's really trying to navigate the northern part of a small state, so there wasn't much cost for travel or for lodging because everything's so close together there. But yeah, I'd say above all else, housing. Housing is the challenge.
Thank you so much. Okay, we have another question. What did you feel were the particular strengths of your application? This one I think is quite unique. I'm going to start with you, Carol. What did you think were the particular strengths of your application?
Sure. So I think because my dissertation research was on a similar or related topic, my dissertation research was about pious Muslims and Catholics and sort of how they lived in this sort of very secular environment in France. And I did a lot of that research in Muslim schools in France. And so, again, my postdoc was an extension. It was clearly different, which is important, a different project, but it was an extension of this project I had previously been working on. So I had a lot of knowledge about what I was doing. So I was able to be really clear about exactly what my project was, how I was going to do it, and where I needed to go to do it, which communities I was going to focus on, how long I needed to do, to do the research. And I was really realistic about the challenges. So, for example, I was trying to gain access to some schooling networks that are very, very, very shy and conservative when talking to anyone outside of their networks because they are often oppressed by the government and the government is sort of seeking, especially right now, to shut them down. And so there was a lot of skepticism. And I addressed that very directly in my application and said, I know that this was going to be a challenge. This is why I think I can get around it based on the networking I had already done in the country. And this is my plan B if I get shut out of the school. So I think being really realistic about your research, or my having been realistic about my research was a benefit. And a particular strength in my application.
All right, thanks. Kenny, what about you? What did you think was the strength of your application?
I would say that perhaps the strongest part of my application didn't even come from me. I really think that the letter written by my academic host really helped. I think it's important. I published a couple articles as a graduate student. I'm trying to make this pitch for my project. But when it comes to credibility, my academic host can come in and say, look, I've been working in the field for 30 years, and I've written these books and these articles, and this project, this is, highly significant in our field. And having someone who's earned that credibility go to bat for me like that, I felt like that just, it was a really strong part of my application. Additionally, I think Carol mentioned this. I think it was Carol. I can't remember for sure, but making sure that your application is polished and professional. I think that's really good advice, too, because I tried to send around my project description to several people just to have another set of eyes look at it, to offer suggestions, content-wise or just simply grammatical and just drafting and redrafting and redrafting to make it look as polished and professional as possible. I like to think that I had a polished and professional application, and I'm sure that would help too.
Thank you. Alia, moving on to you, the strength of your application.
Sure, yeah. I guess one thought is that, I think I'm in a STEM field, and so demonstrating the scientific need to better understand some of the questions that I was looking at and drawing a comparison to why Chile in particular, like the geographic location and the Chilean Antarctic, was unique for exploring some of these questions and being able to apply some of my previous work to a new environment, new geographic region, I think hopefully led to some of its strengths. And then again, I think finding, it sounds like it might vary depending on the program, but I think it helped me to find a collaborator that was really enthusiastic about the work. And I think that's also one of the reasons why we're still working together, because we really had nice overlapping research interests. So, yeah, hopefully that helped.
Thank you so much. That actually brings us to the end of our questions, and we have only a couple minutes left for our webinar. And so, in conclusion, I would like to encourage people here to stay connected with us. You can email us at scholars@iie.org. Additionally, if you're looking at any of these postdoc opportunities or early career opportunities, I would encourage you to really carefully read the award description. And if you have questions, on the bottom right side of the award description, there's a link, Join an Office Hour. And we have programming staff every week on the phones or in the, it's actually a go-to meeting room, available to answer your questions. If you have very specific eligibility questions, especially in relation to your dissertation filing date, then I do encourage you to start by looking at the archived webinar about postdoc and early career opportunities. I made a chart that will help put you into specific awards that you might be eligible for, because again, each award, since it's written by a different country, will be slightly different. So thank you again for joining us today. We really feel strongly that this postdoc program in Fulbright will help you professionalize. It will give you an opportunity to expand your research network, your publishing network internationally. It will give you that time that you have to write and publish, which is necessary if you are going to move on to apply for those tenure track jobs that are out in the field. It will give you the opportunity to network with people in your industry, and it'll be a wonderful experience for you and your collaborators abroad. So I encourage you all of you to consider these postdoc opportunities, and we all at Fulbright look forward to hearing from you. Have a great day, and please again reach out if you have any questions. Goodbye.